Are you interested in the current state of the health industry? Want to know more about nutrition, natural medicine, holistic healthcare, and more? You're in the right place. Welcome to Nutrition Prescription with your host, integrative health and nutrition coach, Angela Atkins. She dishes the dirt on a bunch of health topics with a social consciousness flair. Here's Angela.
Welcome to Nutrition Prescription. This is Angela Atkins of YourHealthUnbound.com, and I want to welcome you again today to our new guest, Jennifer Nolenberg. Let me tell you a little bit about Jennifer. She's a nutritional consultant and recipe developer at one of the leading low-carbohydrate diet companies in the United States. She holds a master's degree in chemistry and has done advanced studies in food science. She's always enjoyed baking and became a pastry chef in 2008 and began teaching pastry making and cooking courses. Along the way, she developed Hashimoto's thyroiditis, and she also struggles with prediabetes and feels passionate about helping people with sugar sensitivities to eat well. So I welcome you, Jennifer. I want to learn more about what you do and how you help people. Can you tell us a little bit more about yourself and how you got started?
Absolutely. So my journey began way back, probably 20 years ago or more, actually, when I had a health crisis. I had systemic candida. And at the time, it was kind of hard to get clear advice on what to do about it. It wasn't a common thing. And so I started looking around for sugar substitutes because you could not have sugar on the diet as it feeds candida, which is what I had.
Can you just take a second and let people know who are not aware of what candida is and give them kind of a brief overview of it?
Absolutely. So candida is a yeast that's naturally found in your gut. It's a natural part of your microbiology, basically what's in your digestive system. And what happens is your gut can get unbalanced. The microbes can either, some can grow more prolific and some can be reduced. And so in my case, what happened is I probably had leaky gut at the time and I didn't know it. And the candida overgrew the yeast in my system. And again, it's natural in your system. It just overgrew in my case. And because I had leaky gut, it probably went into my blood. It got into the rest of my body. And so it was systemic. It was all over. So I had fuzzy head. I couldn't think straight. I was in graduate school at the time. And I remember sitting in class and literally falling asleep. And that was not my MO, not my normal thing. You know, you might think that I might have stayed up studying late. And so I fell asleep. But no. I literally could not stay awake. I couldn't focus. I couldn't remember anything. I remember sitting in an exam and I literally sat there and stared at the paper because I couldn't remember anything. And I had studied for at least a week before. So it wasn't, you know, lack of understanding or anything like that. It was literally my body was reacting to the candida. So that's what started looking for sugar substitutes. And at the time, 20 years ago, there really wasn't a lot on the market. There was saccharin and I think aspartame was out at the time, but I didn't care for things that were synthetic. I was a chemist and I knew a lot about synthesis and chemicals, and it just didn't seem like a great idea to me. So
that's to your credit that you had that. Not many of the average consumers have that background. And so it all came as a miracle that we had all these artificial sweeteners to help us get away from sugar.
It was. It really was a miracle at the time. And there were a lot of people pushing it, you know, a lot of food producers. So to make a long story short, I went into food chemistry and I was working on a PhD in food chemistry. And I got a little disillusioned with the food industry at that time. And so I didn't finish my PhD. But as a result of that, I started searching elsewhere. I started searching for other answers. And so at the time when I had the candida, I was told to eat lots of grains and become a vegetarian. And it just seemed contrary to what would be helpful. So what I did is I went on a low carbohydrate diet. And so currently my focus is low carbohydrate because that's literally how my lifestyle has been for nearly 25 years now. But I loved baking and I always did ever since I was a child. So there was a big conflict there. You know, how do you have something that doesn't have sugar in it? And how do you not use the awful sugar substitutes that were available 20 years ago or 15 years ago even to make something sweet and something that you could enjoy? I mean, there were Christmases and holidays and birthdays and I couldn't have any of it. At least that's how I felt. So I really came from this place of guilt and denial and inability to really satisfy what was commonly consumed.
So when you're talking about reducing carb, because the one thing you mentioned was a low carbohydrate diet, and I want to clear this up for the listeners, you're really talking about those simple carbohydrates and refined carbohydrates. You're not talking so much about complex carbohydrates, are you?
You know, so for me personally, I started noticing that wheat would cause me to gain 3 pounds overnight. And so when the grains were pushed on me, so to speak, early on, I really wasn't interested. I kind of wanted to avoid them. So for me, it really is more about protein and vegetables than it is including a lot of complex or grains, carbohydrates of that sort.
Well, I'm talking more about vegetables as complex carbohydrates, where their sugars are a lot different than those in grains because they have the fiber to basically help mitigate the blood sugar regulation that happens when you eat them. So you don't get that when you eat grains.
Exactly. So yeah, I mean, if there was a grain out there, and in fact, there are some seeds that work really well that were super high fiber and, you know, still were effective in baking, then at that time I would have been using them, but I wasn't aware of them. Mm-hmm. So even now, I do incorporate nuts and seeds and I use those as grains, so to speak, in my diet. But yeah, I'm really talking about vegetables being high fiber and being very nutritious and really sustainable in terms of blood sugar.
So what is you're talking about decreasing sugars in your diet. Mm-hmm. How much is too much?
That's a great question. So for me, I'm actually pre-diabetic as well. And the truth is, for the average person, the amount of 1 to 2 teaspoons is about all the sugar, and I mean simple carbohydrates, that a person can tolerate at one time. So that's even for a normal person. So what that means is, in like a real life situation, let's take a bagel, for example, which may be something common someone would have for breakfast. It can have upwards of 20 grams, or I'm sorry, I think it's 50 grams of, that's not right, sorry. I think it's around 25 grams of sugar in that one bagel. And so each teaspoon of sugar is about 4 grams. So really you're talking about up to 5 teaspoons of sugar in that single bagel, which is a lot.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what's interesting about sugar is that they're really, it's not a necessary food. It's not something that our bodies need. It's not a requirement for survival, essentially. And you're looking at protein, you're looking at fat as being essential for survival. Carbohydrates are not. Now, that doesn't mean that, you know, don't go eat any vegetables because you don't need to have them. You do. You need the fiber. You need the nutrients that come from vegetables. But what ends up happening with protein and fiber and sugar is that sugar is not essential. So when I look at my diet, I look at decreasing sugar, of course. And of course, that's a healthy thing to do for just about anybody when you really look at how much sugar is in our food. But if you go online and you search and you look for how much sugar do we need in our diets, you won't find an answer because it doesn't exist. It's not real. It's not something we need to have. But there are recommendations out there to keep it below 25 to 30 grams for women specifically and 30 to 35 for men per day.
See, I actually, because my clients are usually older and have chronic illnesses or they're already on medications because of chronic illnesses, I even decrease that further. I try to keep them under 10 grams of sugar a day. And the thing about grams is we don't use the metric system. Why aren't our nutrition labels in imperial values that we understand. That's the thing that drives me crazy, but that's another topic completely. But so when you're talking grams, people should use the math in their head and say, oh, how many teaspoons that is that?
Yeah, that's what I would recommend. I mean, again, there's 4 grams of sugar per teaspoon, but so you can kind of calculate it out. The nice thing is that food labels do, or they're going to at least, start calling out the sugars.
Yes, the newer food labels do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so then it's easier, you know, if you have a granola bar, say, for example, that you enjoy and that you really love and you don't want to remove from your diet, take a look at the food label and just see how many grams of sugar does it have. I don't tend to eat processed food, but what I recommend for people is to look for a label that has 5 grams or less and only eat one of those foods in a day. So, right. For example, if you're used to having a granola bar for your snack, you know, after lunch or after breakfast and before dinner, then maybe just have 1 granola bar that day, because really you're just eating a lot of sugar in that product, because I guarantee you are going to have a hard time finding a product with less than 5 grams of sugar in it.
And not only that, is that there are a lot of hidden sugars in these foods. It may not be called out as sugar, but it'll have other names, dextrose, sucralose, all these other names in there that you may not be aware of that they're sugar.
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I also recommend that if you look at the label, I mean, another way of doing it is just make sure that if you see sugar listed, and it may be, again, listed as those hidden sugars, look for dextrose, polydextrose, any of those, as the 6th or later ingredient. So in other words, the first 5 ingredients should not be any sugar at all.
Well, anything that ends in that OSE is related to a sugar chemical. The first thing you should think about is the fact that it's a chemical. You don't want to ingest that anyway. Sugar at least is natural. It's a natural product. So if you're going to have some, have the real thing and have as little of it as you possibly can. That's less than 5 grams like you recommend.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what sweeteners do you recommend?
So as I've done a lot of research, I was really excited about 15 years ago when, maybe about 20 years ago, when Splenda came on the market, sucralose. And at the time when it first came out, you could only get it in Canada. And I actually ordered it over the internet because I was so excited to have something new on the market that supposedly was made from sugar. Well, it's really not made from sugar. It has a similar structure to sugar, but it really is certainly not made from sugar, and it is not a natural product. It is completely synthetic. Now, I did some early baking with Splenda, and I couldn't stand it. I didn't like the flavor. I didn't find that I had any negative reactions to it. I wasn't allergic to it or didn't get sick or anything like that. But more and more evidence is showing that it's not a fantastic replacement. So then I began searching sugar alcohols, because the company that I work with uses them in their products. And I thought, well, maybe they know what's going on and I should check these out. So I began looking at them. And more evidence has also suggested that there are quite a big variance in types of sugar alcohols. So I use erythritol and xylitol and stevia in combination. Mm-hmm. And I use them specifically in combination because they, on your taste buds or in your body, they reflect sugar. They're more similar to sugar in taste and how they cook. And I've been able to, with the use of stevia, decrease the amount that's necessary to make a finished baked good so that it still tastes good, but it doesn't have nearly as much sugar alcohol as normal people would be putting into their products. A lot of people, for example, suggest you replace xylitol 1-for-1, like cup for cup in recipes as an exchange to help with sugar, blood sugar. And I 100% disagree with that.
What do you recommend?
So I recommend, I usually decrease when I change recipes. Like what I do is I convert recipes from high carbohydrate traditional, like say, for example, a brownie recipe. I'll convert it to a low carbohydrate, low sugar recipe. And the first thing that I do is I decrease the sugar by at least half. That's like step one. Step two is I'm changing out the flour. So I would either substitute almond flour. Sometimes I use chia flour or flaxseed. Also coconut flour is great. And so those flours, when you're putting those flours in, they can change the baking properties. So you may not get as big of a cake or as big of a muffin, so to speak. And so the serving size might change. So everything else is decreased at the same time. So what I do is I start looking at how much sugar is it going to take to make something that has less volume sweet. And I kind of go from there. And it's, you know, it's based on every single recipe is different. So there's a lot of testing involved. There's a lot of work.
But you're using your chemistry all the time. And that's the one thing about baking. It is far more chemistry based than even cooking is.
Yeah.
I used to bake a lot. And until I had discovered I had celiac disease, it was my favorite thing to do. I mean, I was always coming up with concoctions that I just, you know, tried on my family and usually to great success. But yes, I think converting things over to non-glutinous grains or nut flours is a great advantage for lowering the carbohydrate level if you don't use as much. I mean, it still has to be a right portion size. That's the other portion of the equation. You still can't eat the entire cake.
Exactly.
You still have to have a portion and control that. So yeah. When you find these recipes, how do you offer them? How do you offer them to people to use?
Well, thanks for asking. I have a book that I wrote in last year, September of 2016, called Sweet Synergy. And it is a 100% dessert cookbook that is sugar-free and gluten-free. And all the nutritional information is in the book as well for each recipe. So that's one way. The other thing I have is a website called lowcarbpower.com. And on that website, I offer lots more recipes, and they're all mostly desserts. The company that I work for, I do a lot of savory dishes for them, but of course they don't require sweeteners, so it's not as much of an issue, I feel, as the desserts. And
Well, tell me a little bit about how Low Carb Power came to be.
So I feel like there's a lot of information on ketogenic diets, on paleo, on low carb, but there's a lot of pieces that are missing from each of those diets. And for me, there's a piece of low carb that has a lot of power behind it, but putting it all together into the big picture is what's really necessary. And so I started that a year ago to try and help people basically bridge their cravings, because I think anytime you're changing your diet and you're decreasing sugar, the cravings come up, and how do you get around those? And so in working in the last probably 7 years on this, this is kind of what I've developed. And the reason why I've focused on desserts is because it's the one missing key component. As I even described in my early years, having candida, it's the one piece that's still socially acceptable and socially normal that's missing out of a lot of these diets that I think I found a resolution to. And one thing I wanted to note that I recognized out of doing all these recipes and creating them, they're higher in fiber. They actually naturally contain a little more fat because a lot of them are made with nuts, or say, for example, chia or flaxseed flour has a lot of fat in them.
We want to say healthy fats.
Healthy fats.
Healthy fats, yes.
Yeah, I don't mean, you know, scary fat.
I always try to make that distinction, especially with my clients, because when you say the word fat, especially to somebody in my generation, it's a, oh no, I can't have fats. It'll make me fat. And I've been working on the notion that healthy fats don't make you fat. Sugar makes you fat. We need to get away from sugar and towards healthy fats.
That's a really terrific point. So one of the things that I wanted to say that, I mean, it still amazes me to this day. So I've done book signings and things. And so when I do book signings, I bring a couple of recipes. I bring a couple different types of cookies and brownies and things for people to try. And what I've noticed is that they're not grabbing for more. And you think to yourself, oh, well, then they must not taste good. But the truth is, they're satisfying.
Exactly.
And they're not triggering that sugar craving that you normally get. Like normally you eat a cookie and you're like, oh, I could really eat two or three of those. And sometimes you do. But with these, you really are satisfied with one.
Yeah, without the sugar, because the sugar is going to trigger that dopamine in your brain, and you're just going to want more. It's just you want to recreate that feeling. It gives us a slight high. And I don't even think people realize when they're eating sugar that it actually is an addictive act, because that those neurotransmitters are getting lit up just the same way you did if you were, you know, taking cocaine. And it's that constant, you know, just trying to recreate that feeling. So you have to have 2, 3, 4 cookies. Whereas if you're eating something that has healthy fats, you're feeling satisfied. You get the flavor, you get the taste, but you also get the satisfaction, which is something that's missing from current preparations of most processed desserts and dessert foods.
That's right. Yeah, it's interesting to consider that really a baked food or dessert is typically something that is really processed. I mean, it's cooked, you know, but it's not processed in the negative sense, full of chemicals.
Correct.
You know,
correct.
Big company processed kind of thing.
Yeah, when I think of processed, I actually think more manufactured. You know, it's going through this big, heavy, formalized manufacturing process that comes out with this product at the end that needs to be wrapped in a package or put in plastic. Whereas when you cook something at home, whether you process it, meaning by cooking it, you can have it in its natural state. You can mm-hmm. take it out. It can live in an environment that doesn't need to be sealed up. Yeah. And I think so many people these days have gotten away from cooking and gotten away from baking that they want the easy grab it off the shelf. Mm-hmm. I think this is a great idea to bring back healthy snacking, bring back things that people can enjoy without indulging in sugar.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
So Jennifer, would you be willing to share some recipes with the listeners, something they can get easily to make at home?
Absolutely. Yeah. All the recipes that the recipes on my website are available for free, of course, at any time. And then I will go ahead and post a special recipe for this group on my website. And I'll share that real quickly right now as well, if that makes sense. One of my favorite in-between meal treats, and actually it works as a great muffin for breakfast. It's got protein, healthy fats, and fiber in it, and it's incredibly satisfying and delicious. I call it a chia muffin in a minute. And it's very simple to make. It's microwavable. There's not a great version that you can put in the oven because the nature of this particular recipe works perfectly in the microwave. And all you need is a coffee mug. You need 1 egg, 1 teaspoon of healthy oil like olive oil, 2 tablespoons chia meal, and that is simply 2 tablespoons of chia seeds that you grind up in a grinder, and then 2 tablespoons of protein powder. You can use pea protein if that's what you're into, or you can use whey protein powder. Just make sure there's no added sugars in either of those. 1 teaspoon of xylitol, 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon, 1/4 teaspoon of baking powder, and if you want, you can add 1/2 teaspoon of cinnamon and 1/2 teaspoon of vanilla. And literally all you do is mix that up in your little mug and put it in the microwave for 1 minute. And it's kind of shocking. You don't think that this concoction is going to make a muffin, but it puffs up in the microwave and you get this beautiful brown, it's almost like a bran muffin, but obviously it's not made from bran flour, so I'm not calling it that, but that's kind of the taste. You know, it's got kind of this nutty, delicious taste to it. Sometimes I add essential oils to that as long as they're certified therapeutic grade. And
absolutely.
1 to 2 drops is all you need, and you're good to go. I've made a lemon version of this with lemon essential oils. You could also use 1 teaspoon of lemon zest to make that.
So let me just jump in here real quick for people who have gotten their pen and paper out and trying to write that recipe down. Yes. Don't worry about it. Jennifer's going to provide a link that I'm going to put below this podcast. You'll be able to click right onto it and go over to her site and get that special recipe just for this group.
Yeah. So I had that for breakfast this morning, in fact.
Nice.
So, and you're talking about 2 tablespoons of chia flour has a lot of fiber. That's great fiber to start your day. But the other key thing is that it has protein in it, so it's going to stabilize your blood sugar throughout the day. And 1 teaspoon of xylitol is equivalent to typically maybe what's in 2 pieces of xylitol gum. So it's not a lot of sugar substitute, and it's not something that will disturb your gut in terms of sugar alcohols being hard on your gut. It's just a small amount.
Great. Well, Jennifer, we could continue on, I guess, forever talking about great desserts and everything. But I just wanted to remind everybody that we will have the link to Jennifer's offers. She's going to provide a sugar-free, gluten-free, low-carb pantry checklist. And that will be something you'll be able to click through right under this podcast. And she's also offering her book that she wrote last year called Sweet Synergy. That link will also be available to you under the podcast. And the one extra thing that we have, that bonus, is that recipe that you can click through and get it for your download to make your own chia muffin. So I hope you'll take advantage of that. Is there anything you want to close out with today, Jennifer?
You know, one thing I would say is that in my experience, decreasing sugar, there are like 2 trains of thought. And one train is just do it overnight, quit, stop, don't eat any sugar. And then the other train is to do it slowly. I think it just depends on your personality, which one is better for you. And I'm not saying that it's necessary to quit all sugar. You may not have health issues that require it, but it's probably one of the most healthy choices that you can make for yourself to do that. And so knowing yourself a little more, knowing what works and what doesn't work for you, either overnight, just quitting, or slow and easy, that's up to you. But if you're going to choose to do it, the first thing I recommend you playing with is stevia. There's stevia back probably 20 years ago is not the same stevia that it is now. They've been able to remove some of the bitter components of it. And so a little goes a long way, but it's really an ideal sweetener for starting out. And I would start out by exchanging that for the sugar you might put in your coffee or your tea. Just start slowly and work your way up.
Great. That's great advice, Jennifer. Thank you so much for joining me today.
You're welcome. Happy to be here.
So I wanted to thank all the listeners for joining us today. You can get in touch with Jennifer at her website, lowcarbpower.com. Be sure to click the links and take advantage of her offers. And I hope you'll join us here again on Nutrition Prescription. This is Angela Atkins from yourhealthunbound.com saying thank you and join us again soon.
Yay!
Thanks so much for listening to Nutrition Prescription with your host, Angela Atkins. Find her online at yourhealthunbound.com, Twitter at Angela C. Atkins, and Facebook.com/AngelaAtkinsHNCoach. We'll see you next time.